failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies. Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. I'm glad you could be with us. We're going to have Terry Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition join us here in a little bit. And we'll also have an additional segment from the Drug Policy Alliance Conference held in Long Beach, California. And I just kind of wanted to update you on the fact we got our 48th station just the other day, WYQZ out of Bealeton, Virginia. And I'd like to welcome them to the Drug Truth Network. And now, here's our interview with Terry Nelson. Once again, I'm proud to welcome one of the members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc, to the Drug Truth Network. Tell the folks a little bit about your work experience.
Well, I'm a 32-year veteran of the drug wars. Started out with the Border Patrol, switched over to Customs Patrol, worked in the Florida Keys, running the speedboats, interdicting the narcotics down there during the 80s. Then I changed over to Air Marine Division in the early 90s, and from that point on worked primarily along the southern border and in Central and South America.
Terry, there's news all over this world, really, about this drug war, how it impacts people, but down around the border it gets pretty nasty sometimes. Tell us about some of your more bizarre or threatened experiences down there.
Well, many years ago out in El Paso, we were Border Patrol agents out there are pretty regularly sniped at from across the border, and some of it may be just trying to get you to shoot back so they can, you know, claim that you had an armed incursion into their country. But it's a typical thing that's caused by the drug trade is the corruption of just about everything it touches. And of course, it has corrupted many officials in Mexico, although there are some very good people down there working hard. It's corrupted many of the officials in Mexico, and it's caused some problems.
Especially on the U.S. side, we're starting to see signs of that corruption. I think the third sheriff most recently got indicted down in Texas for money laundering, drug sales to prisoners, etc., etc. Your thoughts, sir? Is there a way to end this drug war?
In my humble opinion, there is. We've tried for 30 years or 30 plus years in the enforcement side of it, and it's not working. Drugs are much more prevalent now than they were in the beginning, more expensive than they were. The jails are full of people that that really don't need to be there. They've made mistakes. I'm not making excuses for them. They have made mistakes, but young people often make mistakes. We don't need to punish them for the rest of their lives. So I believe that the only solution is to legalize the drug as we do alcohol and tobacco. The old saying goes, prohibition didn't work with alcohol in the 30s, and it's not working with drugs in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's a failed policy, and it certainly needs to be changed.
We were talking a bit earlier about how history repeats itself, how these indictments of these sheriffs is really nothing new. You've heard of that before, sir?
Actually, the sheriff of my hometown of Brackettville, Texas, was arrested for selling dope. This was 20 years ago, I guess. And then we just saw an incident in the paper about a tug-of-war with a load of dope stuck in a river out in Hudson County. I had a very similar event to that happen in El Paso, just west of town there in the late 70s. In that event, we managed to get the bigger tow truck, and we towed it into America, but the load got stuck in the middle, and Mexican police showed up on one side, we were on the other, and they put a tow truck on it trying to tow it out, and we had a tow truck on this side, so it was a stalemate. And then we called in a bigger tow truck and started towing their tow truck back into the river, and they cut the rope and let it go. So that's how we got it that time. This is not it's not new. This happens quite a bit. And even out in the desert in Arizona, you chase a load back, and then the armed, uniformed people on the other side of the river will either shoot at you or point guns at you and make you stop so you can't catch the load before it gets back in. It's just a lot of corruption caused by it. And if we legalize this stuff, then we'd make it a medical problem, but at least we'd take the corruption out of it, and maybe these countries could start investing their money in the infrastructure instead of trying to fight this crazy drug war and have to deal with all the corruption that happens in their country caused by the money that they are able to pay the officials, which, of course, is foreign and and far more than they can make, you know, just working honestly. So it's, the temptation is a little too great. Happens on this side too, I guess, from time to time. I don't know any personally anyone that was ever corrupted, but I know of people, and the temptation was always there if you wanted it. Just you have to have higher moral values than that, and don't put yourself at the level with the bad guy.
Well, Terry, if you'll allow me, I'm going to read a little bit from this report from WorldNet Daily. This is in regards to that dump truck that got stuck in the middle of the river.
Yeah.
Here's the quote. Agents called for reinforcement from the Texas State Troopers and Hudspeth County Sheriff and began unloading the haul, estimated to have been nearly 3 tons when everything changed. Officers started to retrieve the bundles when armed suspects appeared. And according to the Hudspeth County deputy, the dump truck driver returned with armed men, some of whom drove official-looking vehicles. Some of those armed men appeared to be Mexican soldiers in uniform with military weapons. How often does that happen? And if the military is involved, how can we envision an end to this drug war?
Well, I believe that the military certainly is involved. Now, I'm not saying all units are. I'm sure there are many honest units over there, but who's going to argue with the end of a gun barrel? And I know we can't shoot them, because in that case, then you start an international incident, and so your only option is to back off and trust that they'll be satisfied with just getting their dope back. This happens all along. There's been officers shot at, Indian Nation officers shot at out in Arizona by people wearing uniforms. When I was involved with at the embassy in Mexico City several years back, it was pretty prevalent that we would have to brief the people on the border incursions and stuff, and it was getting worse. Probably, I haven't worked on the border with Mexico in quite a while, about 7 or 8 years now, but it was bad when I lived out there, and I'm sure it's getting even worse incrementally as the days go on. The problems are certainly, as indicated by down in Laredo, the problems down there are bigger and bigger all the time, and it's due just 99% to illegal narcotics.
Well, Terry, you're a relative newcomer to this organization, LEAP. Tell us a little bit about what attracted you to it and your involvement.
So I retired in June, and I was doing some research and ran across an article by them and went in and checked, and I thought, well, my goodness, there are people out there that agree with me. I'm not standing alone in this. So I called up the executive director, Mr. Jack Cole, and we talked, chatted for a while, and talked about it. And I'm not a joiner of organizations. As a matter of fact, other than the VFW, this is the only organization's cause I've ever joined. But I feel comfortable doing it. I will admit that there was a brief period when I didn't know if I was a traitor or a patriot, but I overcame that pretty quickly, and I believe I am a patriot, and I'm still in public service my country still, as I did for 30-some-odd years, because this has to be stopped. It's just ruining too many lives, and it's a terrible waste of money.
Well, I saw an article, I think in a Fort Worth paper, about LEAP, and it featured interviews of a half dozen or so of you gentlemen, and talked about there comes a time, kind of a glimmer, a shining, if you will, that makes that attitude change. Is there something in your past that brought this to focus for you?
I just don't like doing something with no chance of winning. I like to work hard, and I like to earn my pay, and I always did. But if you're fighting or doing something and it's not working, you certainly need to change the way you're doing it. You don't just keep, you know, as Mr. Will Rogers, the Oklahoma fellow, said, that if you find yourself in a hole, you need to stop digging. And we just keep digging ourselves deeper and deeper in the hole, to, you know, billions and billions of dollars being thrown down this hole for no reason, and not to count the social cost of lives ruined, being put in jail for possession and dealing in marijuana and other controlled substances. It's just when you reach that point, you have to tell yourself, you got to do something. What you're doing is not working, so you need to change how you do business. And the old saying, if it's broke, fix it. And my goodness, I think everybody knows it's broke. It just, no one wants to stand up and take the heat for saying, hey, this is broke, we need to fix it. And we just keep congratulating ourselves and patting each other on the back for another 10-ton load seized. And I had the good fortune to go into South America in January of this year, and took a group of men down there with me, and we got 14 tons of a boat. 14 tons of cocaine. My Christ, that's a lot of dope. And it made no difference in the street value. The more you catch it, they just have more to keep filling the voids. The price doesn't go down. You catch 100,000 pounds and doesn't even make a dent. That should tell somebody that what we're doing is not working.
It's been a couple of weeks ago, but we both returned from the Drug Policy Alliance Conference, and LEAP had a table set up there that was doing booming business. I understand you guys are up to 4,500.
I haven't looked at the numbers on that, but yes, we signed up probably as close to 600 new members out there, and I believe our speakers, we got 95 or 96 speakers now, right out of 100 speakers that are law enforcement officers or judges that go around the country speaking. And as a matter of fact, I have an engagement over in Arlington right after the first of the year to go and talk to a group over there to spread the word. And that's what we're doing. The speakers, we get out and talk to local social groups that want to hear from us, and, you know, interviews on radio and television and stuff like that. So, of course, we wouldn't be in LEAP if we didn't believe in the cause. So, we all talk about it. A bunch of old narcs sit around, and we all of us pretty much agree it's broken. It needs to be fixed. And the only way we see to fix it is to legalize it. I'm always open to suggestions. If somebody got a better mousetrap, you know, we'd be happy to consider it. But this is the only way we see to do it right now, because it's broke and it needs to be fixed. So at a minute, you should open up, get dialogue in the nation, you know, talking about it. You asked a little earlier, something just popped in my mind. You asked a little earlier about what makes people change their mind on things. Well, following the medical marijuana thing out in, I believe there's 10 states now that have legalized medical marijuana, and then the federal government just saying, we don't respect the vote of the people in those states. It's still going to be illegal. We're still going to enforce it. That's shocking to me that they just write off the will of the people like that. Voted for medical marijuana, and the federal government just said, no, you can't do it. We said no, and that's it. To hell with, you know, what people think or how they vote. And that's wrong. Our government has to be responsive to people. When it stops being responsive, then serious changes need to be made.
Once again, that was Terry Nelson, former law enforcement official, and now a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc. Now comes the drug czar, John Walters.
When you look at the problem and deal with young people seriously, and you look at the pathways to dependency and abuse, we cannot rest with the old view that marijuana is somehow a gateway. It's a dead end for increasing percentages of teenagers today based on the kind of product it is today. In addition, it is a factor because these users are not 17, 16, 18, 19. The average age of first use of marijuana today in many communities, and the average nationally, is 13, 14, and many it's 12, 11, and 10. It's not just a gateway. It's a dead end.
This bud's so good that when I smoke it, the government freaks out.
I've got one more segment here from the Long Beach Conference, put together by the Drug Policy Alliance, and perhaps other than Norm Stamper, the former Seattle police chief and author of the new book, Breaking Rank, the hit, the highlight of this convention was the mayor of Salt Lake City, one of the best drug reformers I've ever met, Mr. Rocky Anderson.
America is currently engaged in a war that cannot be won and which should never have begun. It is a war that has only made the initial problem exponentially worse and has caused tremendous tragedy in the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans, as well as countless people in other nations. I'm not talking here about the disastrous debacle in Iraq. I'm speaking about what has been called the war on drugs. When our country's leaders declare war, we expect that they do it for our good and for the good of our nation, not simply to provide themselves with personal political advantage or a scapegoat to distract us from tough problems and politically difficult solutions. We expect that they will conduct a war with clear objectives in mind and that they will pursue those objectives effectively. and with integrity. Disastrously, as with the war in Iraq, our nation's so-called war on drugs has violated all of those principles. Roughly 30 years have passed since this purported war began. There have been no winners, but there have been plenty of losers. You and I have lost as taxpayers and citizens, as of the hundreds of thousands of nonviolent drug offenders who have been incarcerated under outrageous mandatory minimum sentencing and compulsory guideline sentencing laws, and their families. The most vulnerable, our youth, have lost because we have neglected to provide them with the prevention, harm reduction, and treatment programs that would actually make a positive difference. Lives have been destroyed. Lives have been lost due to drug abuse because effective prevention programs, harm reduction measures, and efficacious treatment have been denied, while most of the war on drugs resources have been diverted and wasted on source control, on ineffective interdiction efforts, on incredibly expensive imprisonment of an ever-growing number of men and women, and on failed feel-good nonsense like the notoriously ineffective DARE program. Blaise Pascal once said, "Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from a mistaken conviction." When it comes to the war on drugs, there has been enormous evil done as a result of politically driven, mistaken convictions about substance abuse. As policymakers, leaders, and community members, we must honestly face the societal costs of the creation of what, without hyperbole, can be described as the American gulag. Although the word war in the phrase war on drugs is a misnomer, the casualties are very real. Grossly excessive incarceration wreaks devastation on hundreds of thousands of individuals and families in the United States. The incarceration trends reflect tremendous racial disparities and horrific impacts on women, as well as enormous ever-growing burdens on taxpayers. The incarceration rate in the United States now far exceeds that of any other nation. With over 2.1 million inmates in the nation's prisons and jails in 2004, the incarceration rate of 724 per 100,000 residents compares extremely unfavorably with other industrialized nations, such as Australia, with a rate of 120 per 100,000, one-sixth the rate of the United States, and Canada with a rate of 116, France with a rate of 88, and Japan with a rate of 60, one-twelfth the U.S. rate of incarceration. The growth in the prison industrial complex in the United States is due largely to the increase in the incarceration of drug offenders. In 1981, there were about 20,000 sentenced inmates in the federal prison population, 25% of whom were drug offenders. That was in 1981. By 2004, that number had mushroomed to over 180,000 prisoners in our federal system, 55% of whom were serving time for a drug offense, and only 11 in the federal system were in prison for a violent offense. As of 2002, nearly one in four persons in prison, state and federal, in the United States was in prison for a drug offense. The number of people incarcerated for drug offenses, nearly 500,000, is roughly the same as the entire prison and jail population in this country in 1980. In the United States, there are 100,000 more people incarcerated for drug offenses than all of the prisoners in the European Union, even though the European Union has 100 million more citizens than the United States. From 1986, when the federal mandatory minimum sentencing laws were enacted, through 2001, the Federal Bureau of Prisons budget increased by almost 2,000%, jumping from $220 million in 1986 to $4.3 billion in 2001. The cost of incarcerating prisoners in the United States for drug offenses alone now exceeds $9 billion annually. The impacts of the crazed compulsion to imprison in the United States reflect a racist and sexist disregard of the tragic inhumanity of our nation's unwillingness and seeming inability to honestly and effectively deal with the problems of drug abuse. Incarceration rates as of June 2004 were 393 per 100,000 for whites, 2,531 per 100,000 African Americans. 393 for whites compared with 2,531 for African Americans. It gets worse when the comparison is between white males and African American males. 717 compared with 4,919 per 100,000, a ratio of about one white for seven African Americans. The astounding disparity becomes even more apparent when we compare incarceration rates for white males aged 25 to 29 and African American males in the same age group. 1,666 compared with 12,603 per 100,000. That translates into 12.6% of African American men in their late 20s in U.S. prisons and jails. Approximately 200,000 women are in U.S. prisons or jails now, reflecting the rapid growth of women's incarceration at nearly double the rate for men over the past 20 years. That increase is disproportionately due to the so-called war on drugs. Women in prison are far more likely than men to be serving a drug charge. The rage to punish for drug offenses is only part of the strategy that has led to a devastating loss of the war on drugs. Our nation's approach to drug prevention too often has been to demonize bad behavior and insist that abstinence is the only acceptable path. This approach has caused untold harm. Making wise decisions requires experience, good judgment, and responsibility. If we want our children to act responsibly, we must entrust them with the tools and honest information to make sound decisions. If they decide to use drugs, we owe it to them to equip them with as much honest, useful, research-based, harm-reducing information as possible. Much of our teaching to children completely short-circuits any rationality in the decision-making process. It is posed in an all-or-nothing context. Total abstinence is the only possibility. We tell them to just say no, period, end of discussion. Anyone who does drugs is a bad person. Little of this rhetoric resonates with young people exposed to drug use. We must be far more respectful, honest, and informed when working with young people if we're to help them avoid drug use or to avoid harm to the extent possible if they choose to use drugs. The Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program, DARE, was one of the darlings of the mid-1980s War on Drugs campaign and is still one of the most popular programs offered in our nation's classrooms. However, extensive peer-reviewed research has shown DARE to be at best ineffectual and at worst counterproductive at curbing drug use. One study even showed that suburban children who participated in the DARE program actually engaged in significantly higher levels of drug use than suburban students who did not participate in DARE. If we can stand firm for what we know are the most effective approaches and withstand the inevitable backlash that comes with challenging the assumptions of those set in their failed ways, history will reward us and we will make progress. When dealing with drug policy, we can, if we act with integrity and tenacity, save many thousands of lives, vastly improve millions of lives, and save taxpayers billions of dollars. Recently, in two separate incidents, the bodies of Salt Lake City area teenagers Amelia Sorich and Zachary Martinez were dumped in mountainous locations by desperate friends who failed to call for help while these teenagers were dying of drug overdoses. We're commencing a campaign now in conjunction with Luciano and the Harm Reduction Project to bring in every way possible, billboards, radio advertisements, even a message on our city's hold line, telling people, if you're going to be doing drugs, if you're with somebody who's doing drugs and they're in trouble, make the decision now. Think through it now to get them medical help. Don't leave them alone. Don't panic. Don't worry about your own legal foreclosure. The Harm Reduction Project has offices in Salt Lake City and Denver, and they are, without a doubt, saving lives. The HRP has become the largest provider of harm reduction programming in the Rocky Mountain region. This is a program based in reality. It's not bare head in the sands wishing the world were different than it is. It's recognizing people will engage in risky activities. We need to recognize that, and we need to do everything we can at all levels of government, everywhere in our community, to help people make the right decisions to reduce the harm, even if they engage in some of these risky activities. We have a lot of information about what does work and about what doesn't. We must call upon policymakers to exercise the integrity and courage to be effective and discontinue the diversion of precious resources towards strategies that have been demonstrated failures. It's this simple. We know that harm reduction, treatment, and certain prevention programs are both cost-effective, cost-efficient, and effective. And we know that source control, interdiction, incarceration do not work. If the war on drug strategies, we would have fewer drugs on the street at higher costs. Instead, we have more drugs on the street at lower costs. And although we have spent billions of dollars in incarcerated people at historic rates, we continue to ruin lives. And as a result of all of this, we're spending more money and engaging in these failed solutions. Hence, we know we have lost the war. We know that we lost this war a long time ago. It is high time now to make the peace by the exercise of greater wisdom, greater reason, greater compassion, greater justice, and greater humanity. I offer gratitude to all of you, your earnest personal commitment, your wisdom, your energy, so much of your time, your passion, and your hearts to helping save lives, to helping improve the quality of life for others, and to making our communities better, safer, healthier places for all. Thank you for all you're doing.
Wow. Hey, Rocky in 08?
Well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of Century of Lies and that you'll join us next week when we'll be giving you reports from Seattle, Washington, as well as from Vancouver, British Columbia. As always, I remind you there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, medical data, religious underpinnings, in fact, no reason whatsoever for this drug war to continue. Please do your part to help end this madness. Please visit our website, inprohibition.org. We've been duped. The drug lords run both sides of this equation. Prohibido ist doc evilesco. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.